Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
But first this morning, tonight in University Concert Hall in Limerick, the TG Cahir Grotham Keogh Awards take place and dancer Jean Butler will be getting a Lifetime Achievement Award. 30 years ago this week, she brought something truly new and exciting to the stage with Riverdance, and she went on tour with the show after producers Moya Doherty and John McColgan and composer Bill Whelan saw the incredible potential in her performance that night, along with fellow dancer Michael Flatley. Well, I'm delighted to say that Jean Butler is back in Ireland and she joins me from our Limerick studio. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Miriam. How are you?
First of all, congratulations. Are you looking forward to tonight?
I am. You know, it's a wonderful thing to be recognised for the work that I've done, and I'm very grateful to Grotham and TG Cahir for including myself and dance really in the awards, which I think is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. Lots of people saying this week, Jean, they can't believe it's 30 years since that night when Riverdance was born. What does it feel like for you?
Well, it depends on my knees in the morning. it feels very strange. I mean, to be honest with you, I didn't even remember it was 30 years. So, you know, social media had to remind me that that there was this anniversary. I mean, it's wild. You know, it feels like a lifetime ago. And also, you know, it feels like yesterday in some ways.
Deirdre, my producer, was saying, you mentioned that in your archive, you found a fax about that original dress you wore. Beautiful dress.
Yes, I did. You know, because of the Lifetime Achievement Award, I've kind of had to look back and kind of think about a lot of things. And, you know, my memory of particularly the Eurovision was that it was just an incredible collaboration between, an incredible team. And that there was timing and teamwork and... And one of the main things I also remember was being able to collaborate with Mags Roach on the original design for the costume. And you have to realize that I had been touring with the Chieftains for 6 years previous to Riverdance. So I was very aware of what made me feel powerful on stage and what I was comfortable dancing in. And it was just a new experience to be working with a costume designer for the first time who was open to that kind of collaboration. And that's just a small moment of collaboration throughout the entire 7 minutes that happened. But it's funny when I look at that sketch, because it was faxed to me. I was in England in the University of Birmingham and I was studying theatre, and it was faxed to me, and I drew all over it and I sent it back, and I was very clear about what I wanted and what I didn't want. And I was also slightly nervous about sending it back. And Mags was just fantastic. And, she came up with the cloak idea and she painted the inside of the cloak, and it was wonderful. I mean, those memories are very special.
Do you still have that dress, Jean?
I do. It's actually in my mom's house.
Wow. That's so lovely you still have it, though.
It is. I mean, I remember I had it. I took it to the dry cleaners to have it preserved, you know, so the moths wouldn't get to it. And but I remember when I took it to the dry cleaners, I couldn't believe the size of it. It was tiny. It just felt like there was no way I ever got into that dress.
I noticed on your Instagram a beautiful photograph of your mom, and you just mentioned her there. Mm. She came originally from Mayo, did she, Jean?
She did. She was a Ballyhaunis lady, and she is one of five sisters and a brother. And she emigrated to the States. She was the second daughter to go to New York. She was 17 years old. And she left for New York, and she never lived in Ireland. She hasn't lived in Ireland again since, but her life is still ahead of her.
Was she always very invested in Irish dancing and the connection to home?
Well, I mean, was she always? I think she got very involved and we got involved. I think, you know, I don't think there was a grand plan that both her daughters would end up being performers, Irish dance performers at all. But I think as soon as she brought us to class and she... I think she just found something that did connect her back to Ireland. She didn't dance very much as a child growing up in Ireland, but she was obviously aware of dance. And I think, you know, the story of the diaspora is trying to connect through your culture in a different country. And she found that. I mean, the first dancing class that we went to, she ran into Tina Harton, who she went to school with in Bacon, in Mayo.
Wow.
And so it was this, you know, I felt immediately relaxed as a child because my mom felt immediately relaxed in the company. So it was this sense of like, oh, these are our people. You know, these are Irish people. We know, I know now who, you know, what mom is talking about.
So where did you grow up? Take me back to your childhood, Jean.
Well, I grew up in New York. I grew up in a suburb in Long Island. It was pretty, you know, pretty normal. Mm. I was laughing recently because everyone always thought when you say Long Island, everyone thinks, oh, you have a swimming pool in Long Island. And we didn't have a swimming pool. But my next door neighbors had a swimming pool and I remember swimming in it and we'd look up and we'd see the planes because we were on the flight path and we'd see the planes. And if there was a plane with the Aer Lingus Shamrock, we'd run home because we thought grandma was arriving. You know, it was, mm. The connection to Ireland was always in the house. Yeah.
And were you conscious? Your dad was American, that's correct. Mm. So were you conscious of your Irishness very early or not?
Well, again, like I think in America you're defined by what you're not as opposed to what you are sometimes. So mm. I was going to school with, you know, children with parents from Italy and Greece and, you know, their lives just seemed really exotic compared to our life. And the other thing that I think is different, that we didn't grow up in an Irish-American community. So we didn't grow up in Brooklyn and we didn't grow up in the Bronx where there was several Irish, you know, Irish families there. We mm-hmm. just happened to be Irish where we lived. So I think there's a difference there. But yeah, there's just an underlying current of something that made us other. You know, my mom came from a different place. She had a slightly different set of values. We did this thing called Irish dancing. So certainly as we got more and more into the dancing, the connections grew and became more clear. And when I started coming to Ireland, you know, I fell in love with Ireland at a very, very young age for some reason. And yeah, I'm still here.
So where did the dancing all start for you? I think you didn't go straight into Irish dancing as a small child. Is that correct?
It is correct, yes. I mean, I did, I was very athletic. I did lots of sport and I also did ballet for a few years, which I think served me very well when I went into my first Irish dancing class because I remember Donnie Golden, my teacher, looked at my mom and just said, she's done some dancing before, hasn't she? And mom said, yes, she just did 2 years of ballet. Mm-hmm. So in some ways, it was a great foundation. But I did prefer Irish dancing to ballet.
And when was your talent spotted in Irish dancing? I mean, when do you think, Jean, people realised you had something extra?
Oh, I don't know if I'm the person to ask that question, Miriam. I don't know. I think I just knew from a very young age that I was particularly determined and I was a very hard worker and very disciplined. So I think all those factors helped any talent that might have been there. So, yeah.
Did you have to work hard, though? I mean, like everything in life, you're obviously talented, but did you practice a lot?
Oh, yeah. Mm. Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, that was my space. That was my safe space. And that was, you know, I grew up with my gorgeous sister, Cara, who's also a dancer, but we shared a room and we're 3 years apart. So there's, you know, this constant bickering and love and, you know, the complications that come with close sisters who actually do the same thing, which makes it more complicated. But, you know, when I went into the basement and closed the door and just practiced for hours, that was heaven to me, to be honest with you, because I was just in my element.
And you mentioned earlier you loved Ireland when you came to it. So when did you start coming over and did you go back and forth for competitions? Is that why you came here originally?
Well, my mom brought us back as children before we started dancing. And there's pictures of myself at my grand's house with my grandfather. I mean, I don't remember meeting my grandfather, but I do have pictures of the two of us together, which is very special. And then years later when we did become heavily involved in competitive dancing. Originally, we would come back once a year for the World Championships. At that time, there was a stint of championships in Salt Hill and Galway. And then we would come back from the All-Irelands. And by the end of our dancing career, we were back and forth to Ireland maybe two or three times a year.
And you mentioned the Chieftains. Mm. Were you still in school when you were invited to go on tour with the Chieftains? Tell me about that.
I was. I was 17 years old, and I got a call to, which I didn't know was necessarily an audition, but to perform with the Chieftains in Carnegie Hall on St. Patrick's Day. So not too much pressure there. but Richard Harris was there that night, and he was doing a bit from Camelot, because I think he was touring that at the time. And I was a huge Richard Harris fan, and that was like beyond exciting. And the next day, Paddy Maloney called me and asked me to go on the road, and I was packing my bags within an hour. You know, there was never a question of whether I would go or not go. And it was, you know, the most wonderful opportunity and certainly an honor at that time, because, you know, the Chieftains really were one of the few bands that employed dancers. You know, before the Chieftains, I had worked with Mick Maloney in the Greenfields of America, and that's really where I cut my first teeth before I got to the Chieftains. And, you know, to this day, you know, those are the two bands that I think, you know, supported dancing in their act for their entire musical careers as bands, you know, which is very important.
Paddy Maloney, he was such a beautiful man, wasn't he?
He was. It's very sad that he's no longer with us, and that we also lost Sean Keane. Yeah. It just feels like it feels like the end of an era, and it's very sad. It's unbelievably sad. I mean, my sister had been dancing with the Chieftains for 30 years, and overnight it just all kind of ended, you know, after COVID. And I think people are still processing it.
So at that time when you were touring with the Chieftains, you were still so young. Did you think at that stage that you were going to make your career, your living out of dance? Is that what you thought? But you also went to college, didn't you? So maybe you weren't that sure.
No, I was pretty sure dance was nowhere in my future. You know, I was pretty sure, you know, what I was doing was kind of as good as it got. And I was very happy with that. And I did know I had a yearning to be on stage and to express myself in a particular way. And I thought, well, you know, if you can't do that through Irish dancing, you're going to do that in a different way. And that's why I was also a huge, huge theater buff. And so I went and I did a degree in theater with the aim of being an actor.
And then when and how did you become full time dancer? In other words, when was that? It's Jean Butler. I'm a dancer. That's what I do.
I'm still waiting to say that sentence. Gosh, I think, you know, it just kind of the whole thing kind of snowballed after Eurovision happened. And then obviously there was an appetite for the full show. And, you know, in some ways, it was just an extraordinary opportunity to keep building on something that I had been doing my entire life, and to teach myself how to be a professional dancer. I mean, there was no guidebook to this. You know, we're all in there for the first time, learning together and learning on our own. And it was a wonderful opportunity. And as I said earlier, my work ethic really allowed me to just, I guess, reach a height as a dancer that I never would have if I didn't have that opportunity. And certainly, you know, everything I've done since has been a knock-on effect in some ways from what I've done previously. So, you know, it does start, not necessarily with Riverdance, but I would think, you know, much earlier in my life when I started dancing with my dancing teacher and learning the what it's like to perform Irish dancing. I mean, it's a very different thing.
When you look back now, I suppose, the 30 years ago to Riverdance, two questions, Jean. Did you know how big it would be? And do you look back fondly on it now? Because I suppose it was so momentous in your career.
I don't think anybody knew how big it was going to be. No. I mean, I think that's, you know, that certainly was part of the impact because it was, you know, it did change the global perception of Irish dance. So, and what was your second question, Miriam? Sorry.
Yeah, just in other words, that did you know when that happened? Do you look back on it very fondly now and think, yes, that did change the course of my career?
I mean, I look back at it. Part of it is I look back very fondly on, and other part of it is, you know, it was very complicated. It was also, you know, we were working really, really hard. So there wasn't a lot of time for reflection. And even now, you know, the reflection is all around, you know, being, you know, we were the first to do something. Mm-hmm. And that's very exciting. And it's also, you know, it's also very daunting. But it was certainly, a gift. You know, it was a real gift to be able to take one's dancing to a level that they would have never have gotten to.
You're in Limerick, of course, because that's where you're getting your T.G. Cahir Award tonight. You know Limerick really well because you studied there for a while. So does it feel a little bit like a homecoming for you?
It's a homecoming in so many ways. I mean, just yes. I mean, I did my master's in contemporary dance here, and Coon and I were based out of Killaloe for a little while when I was doing my master's. But also just to be at the Gradham with so many extraordinary musicians, some that I know from the past and some very new people that I don't know at all. I do feel like in many ways it does feel like a full circle because I, you know, when I was studying in the University of Birmingham, I used to fly over to Dublin as soon as at every chance that I could to just dance with whoever was playing in the sessions at the Hardcourt Hotel or the Ferryman Pub. You know, if we got all the way west to Matt Malloy's, that was like a big treat. And, you know, so I do feel like it is bringing me back before 30 years. It's bringing me back maybe 35 years. So it's wonderful to be back here amongst such company and talent.
You mentioned Coon there, of course. That is your husband. He's the great designer, Coon Hanley. Mm. So you married an Irish man. You both live in New York, I think. Where did you two meet, Jean?
We met in a pub in Dublin.
Of course you did.
Yep.
What pub, out of interest?
The Bailey, the old Bailey.
Wow.
Yeah.
Was it love at first sight?
Now, Miriam. That I'll save for the memoir.
Oh, OK. But now you both live in New York. Funny enough, I spoke to Don O'Neill, another Irish designer, just a few weeks ago on this show about New York, the pace of life, the pressure of the design world. I suppose it's the same in your world of choreography and performance. But do you love the pace of New York?
I do. I mean, to be honest with you, I find the pace of Dublin just as hectic. I was in Dublin working on my show, which we spoke about in 2022, which I just brought to New York, to the Irish Arts Centre. And we were rehearsing in Dublin, and I just couldn't get over the amount of people. Like, it just felt incredibly crowded and buzzy. And I mean, Dublin is usually buzzy, but, you know, I really was quite shocked at the amount of people that I was negotiating, walking to Dance Ireland to rehearse. It did feel very much like New York, the kind of pace of it.
A Lifetime Achievement Award. It's a big deal. You're still very young, of course. How comfortable are you, I suppose, looking back on your career with talk of legacy? Or do you always like to look forward?
I mean, you know, I tend to be always moving forward. But this is it's a nice moment to pause and to look back and kind of go, wow, you know, I have done a lot. And I'm particularly, you know, I'm very proud of the archival work that we're doing with my non-for-profit at the moment. And I think it's really important. And we have great support from the Irish government and the Immigrant Support Program and loads of patrons in New York and my board. And it's wonderful what we're doing in terms of giving back to Irish dance. So in some ways, it is nice to pause. You know, you don't often get a moment to pause. So I am very grateful to Gradham and T.G. Cahir for allowing me to do that.
That's your project, Our Steps. Mm. Tell me about it, actually, and what you set out to achieve with it.
Well, really, we're just archiving our dance history, you know, and we have over 200 hours of audio and video materials collected already. We've done video archives based out of the Joan Robbins Dance Division, the New York Public Library, who are our partners, and they're the custodians of the archive at the moment, so they're taking care of everything in perpetuity for years to come, so it won't get lost. But what I do is I curate older practitioners, dancers, teachers, style influencers who made their mark in a particular area, and then I bring in young dancers who are still dancing today, and I have the older dancers teach the younger dancers their steps from the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s, and I'm particularly interested in the history before Riverdance happened, because I think post Riverdance we have an enormous, you know, everybody has a smartphone. There's more documentation of Irish dance post Riverdance, and there's these moments in time between the 50s and the early 90s that I think weren't documented. Like, for instance, I don't think there's only one or two clips of me as a competitive Irish dancer, which is kind of fine by me. But, you know, at the same time, like, you know, there is a huge history that has gone undocumented, which I'm trying to fix.
Before I let you go, the last time we spoke, Jean, as you said, it was 2020. 22, the crisis, it was just coming to light in Irish dancing, serious issues with the judging at competitions. Do you think there's been enough reform?
I'm not the person to comment on that, to be honest with you, Miriam, and I'm not dodging your question, but yeah. I don't know, because I'm not directly involved in the competitive Irish dancing world and haven't been for so long. And I'm not really over it, so I wouldn't want to say a thing. You know, I just know that there people are trying to do the right thing.
Well, Jean Butler, welcome home. Congratulations on your Gradham Seal, your Lifetime Achievement Award at the TG Cahir Gradham Ceoil Awards. And people can watch the gala concert tonight on TG Cahir at 9:30. Delighted for you, Jean, and thanks so much for chatting to me today.
Thank you, Miriam.
Mind yourself.